So we're diving into some really fascinating stuff this time. The first Great Awakening in America, and then we have the Wesleyan Revival going on in England around the same time. It seems like a lot going on. So we're going to kind of pull out the threads here and see what connects these powerful kind of surges of religious feeling, and then look at what their lasting impact has been, on history and on the world. So think of this as your kind of guided tour, to understanding a really key era in religious and social history. And we're going to try and pull out, like I said, the most crucial insights so you don't get lost in all the details, right? We want to give you those key takeaways and those satisfying aha moments.
Absolutely.
For this deep dive, you've provided me with some material from Dr. Roger Green's church history course,
That's right.
and it's called Reformation to the Present. So it's a pretty
I've
broad,
heard a broad sweep of church history.
pretty broad sweep.
Absolutely.
We're focusing on his lecture specifically on the Great Awakening.
And in that lecture, he kind of lays out this mid-18th century evangelical resurgence. And he introduces us to some of the main movers and shakers of that movement and talks about its theological and social repercussions and kind of gives a little introduction to the Wesleyan Revival, which was happening at the same time.
Okay, so the core of what we're looking at today is this. We're going to get to know the leaders of the first Great Awakening in America. We're going to look at how people responded to it because, I mean, obviously, there were probably some people who were like, "What is going on here?"
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And then we're going to trace its theological and social outcomes. And then we'll start to unpack the Wesleyan Revival in England by first looking at this guy, Jacob Arminius, and his theological backdrop. And then we're going to encounter the early life of John Wesley. So by the end of our deep dive, you, the listener, should have a good grasp of this really kind of transformative era in history
It's a really pivotal area.
that not only changed religious beliefs, but also the course of American society.
So what I think is so insightful about Dr. Green's approach is that he frames this whole evangelical resurgence as in part a response to a lot of the intellectual currents of the day, particularly, the criticisms that were being levied against Christianity and the Bible, like the rise of deism. And he points out that this wasn't an isolated phenomenon, that, this was happening in Germany at the same time with pietism and in England. So it was a broader spiritual stirring that was happening
Got it.
across Western Europe and also the American colonies.
Okay, so that's the setup. Now let's zoom in, like you said, on this first Great Awakening. And when we say first Great Awakening, we're talking mid-18th century primarily, right?
Primarily mid-18th century, yeah.
And kind of 1734 is a key year here.
Yes.
Dr. Green points out a number of individuals who were really key to igniting this whole movement. And we have Theodorus J. Frelinghuysen, who was a leader in the Dutch Reformed Church, particularly in New Jersey.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's kind of interesting how these things start in specific communities and then spread. Then we have Gilbert Tennent, who was a Presbyterian leader in New Jersey and the Middle Colonies. And he was influenced by Frelinghuysen,
It
so
was,
it's already kind of spreading.
Is that he really transcended denominational boundaries. He really did. He was a revivalist who reached both churchgoers and non-churchgoers. He was a magnetic personality. He preached in the open air, and he actually convinced John Wesley to preach outdoors, which became very central to the Methodist movement later. Dr. Green calls him the grand itinerant, which I think is a great,
Yeah, that's a good one.
great description.
Really captures his reach.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we come to Jonathan Edwards.
Yes.
And he's the name that I think most people associate
Yeah, most
most
closely.
closely with the First Great Awakening.
Yeah.
And the revival in his congregational church in Northampton, Massachusetts, is kind of seen as the start of it.
Right.
So 1734 is the generally accepted date. So he was a leader, a preacher, a writer of the awakening.
A very important leader.
And he really brought Calvinism back into American consciousness because, I mean, we have to remember, it had kind of waned, right, since the Pilgrims and Puritans.
It definitely faded.
But his revivals were Calvinistic.
Very much so.
Okay, now I find this interesting because he had a completely different preaching style than Whitefield.
Very, very different, yeah.
Like, Whitefield was this big, dynamic,
I mean,
outdoor.
open air preacher, magnetic personality.
Yeah, and Edwards was more quiet and focused.
He was. He would focus on the church bell rope.
What? Really?
Yeah, as he was preaching.
Wow.
Yeah, but he was deeply biblical and convicting.
Huh. That's interesting.
And, you know, one thing that contributed to his effectiveness was that he was remarkably dedicated to study.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking 16 hours a day. So yeah, that's a lot of time hitting the books.
That is serious dedication.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have this powerful surge of religious enthusiasm.
Yes.
And, you know, not everyone was on board.
Of course not. Yeah.
So Dr. Green outlines three main reactions to the first Great Awakening.
Right.
The first is there were divisions within denominations.
Okay.
So, for example, the Presbyterians,
right,
they split into like the old side who were like, this is too emotional, this is crazy.
They didn't like it.
And then you have the new side who were all about it.
They were. Yeah. They saw it as a genuine work of God.
Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting. These divisions were a big deal.
Yeah.
But they didn't immediately lead to new denominations forming.
No, that came later.
Right. Okay. The second reaction came from kind of these influential figures within the religious establishment at the time.
Yes.
And so we have this guy, Charles Chauncey.
Yes.
And he was the pastor of the First Congregational Church in Boston, which was a very prestigious position at the time.
That's a prestigious guy.
And he really disliked the revival.
Yeah. He was not a fan.
He advocated for sobriety and reason in religion.
Yeah, he was much more rational.
Yeah. Okay. And it's interesting because later on, he actually became a Unitarian.
He did, yes.
So, I mean, you can really see how his fundamental views just didn't align with this whole Great Awakening thing.
Absolutely.
And then the third area of opposition came from some of the universities, which I think is interesting.
It is, yeah.
So Yale, originally founded by Puritans, right?
Yeah, that's right.
To foster religious learning.
Yes.
Well, by the mid-18th century, a lot of the faculty and students there were kind of anti-revival.
Yeah, they were skeptical.
Which is ironic because the Second Great Awakening...
I know, it's kind of funny.
...began at Yale around 1800.
Exactly.
So, I mean...
Interesting.
It's interesting to think about how these things can change over time.
It is, yeah.
And then we have Harvard...
Yeah.
Which was founded by a Puritan, John Harvard, in 1636.
Yes.
And he gave his library like 400 books.
Yes.
To this new college.
Yes.
And the whole goal was to train preachers.
To train ministers, yes.
But by the mid-18th century, it had really shifted toward Unitarian and deistic leanings.
Yeah, much more rationalistic.
And was really critical of the emotionalism of the awakening.
Yeah, they thought it was too much, too emotional.
And their original motto was Veritas in Christo et Ecclesia.
Which means truth in Christ and in the church.
Right. And then they shortened it to just Veritas.
That's right. Just truth.
Which I think really tells you something about, you know.
Yeah, about the shifting landscape.
A shifting landscape.
Absolutely.
Okay, so despite this opposition... The First Great Awakening had a huge impact.
It did, yes.
Both theologically and socially.
Absolutely.
So let's look at first the theological consequences.
Okay.
So one of the major results was this resurgence of Calvinism.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, the key leaders of the Awakening, they were mostly Calvinists.
They were, yeah.
And these core doctrines like election and predestination were central to their message.
They were, yes.
So alongside this renewed focus on Calvinist doctrine, there was also this kind of revival of what Dr. Green calls experiential piety.
That's right.
And this meant that it wasn't enough to just, you know, agree with theology intellectually.
You have to experience it.
You have to experience it.
Yes.
So it was about emphasizing a genuine love for God and for your neighbor.
Yeah, like Matthew 22.
Right. Yeah. It was about really experiencing your faith.
Yes.
Okay. And then this emphasis on personal experience naturally led to personal conversion.
Yes.
Becoming a major test of authentic religious life.
Yes.
So it wasn't enough to just, you know, be born into a Christian community.
Right.
You had to have this personal yes to Christ.
Yeah, it was a much more individualistic way of looking at faith.
Okay, so the Awakening also stimulated a lot of concern for higher education.
Yes.
You know, they needed ministers who were well-equipped.
Yeah, well-trained, articulate.
Yeah, to preach this message.
Yes.
So a number of colleges were founded to train ministers.
Yeah, important colleges.
So we have Princeton.
Yes.
Which was originally called Log College.
Right.
That was a Presbyterian initiative.
It was, yes.
Then we have Rhode Island College.
Yes.
Which later became Brown University.
That's right.
That was a Baptist initiative.
Yes.
Then Queens College.
Yes.
Which is now Rutgers University.
That's right.
That was Dutch Reformed.
Yes.
And then Dartmouth College.
Yes.
Which evolved from a missionary school.
Right.
That was Congregational.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are some pretty major institutions.
Yes, very influential.
That came out of this.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now let's look at the social consequences of the first Great Awakening.
Right.
And as Dr. Green points out, a lot of times it's really hard to separate the theological from the social.
Yeah, they're interwoven.
Right, because they were interwoven.
Yeah.
So one of the key outcomes was this elevation of the common person.
Right.
So the idea that, you know, you didn't have to have a certain social status.
Yeah, it was accessible to anyone.
Right, to have this personal relationship with God.
Yes.
And that really challenged the existing hierarchies.
Yes, very much so.
And it contributed, I think, to this more democratic ethos.
Yes.
In American public life.
Yes.
So that idea that the individual had spiritual worth.
Yeah.
Regardless of where they stood in society.
Absolutely.
I mean, that has huge implications, right?
Huge implications, yeah.
I mean, not just for the church, but for society as a whole.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, and then the Awakening also placed a lot of emphasis on lay activity.
It did, yeah.
So it wasn't just the ordained clergy who had leadership roles and opportunities for service.
It was more widespread.
Right, and that empowerment of non-ordained individuals,
yes.
I mean, that had a ripple effect, right?
Yeah, it went beyond the church.
Yeah, it went beyond the church into society as a whole.
Absolutely.
And this kind of personal independence that was fostered in religious matters, this Jesus and me idea that led to greater independence in political and social life.
Yeah, it kind of spilled over.
Right. And this contributed, I think, to this kind of growing sense of self-governance.
Absolutely.
That led to the American Revolution.
I see.
Okay. And then the first Great Awakening also contributed to the development of the separation of church and state.
Yes.
But Dr. Green makes a really important clarification here.
Okay.
He says the main thing they were concerned about at the time was was freedom from government control of the church.
Right. They wanted autonomy.
Right. So they wanted different denominations to operate on their own.
Yes.
And he says that's kind of different, right?
Yeah.
Like from how we talk about separation of church and state now.
Yes, because now we're often talking about, you know, limiting religious influence in public life.
Right.
Whereas back then.
Right. It was more about.
It was more about being free from government control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Awakening also ignited this humanitarian impulse.
Yes.
You know, the idea of loving God and neighbor.
Yes.
Led to this greater awareness of caring for the poor, widows, orphans.
Yeah, marginalized.
And people like Whitefield, who established that orphanage in Georgia. I mean, he really exemplified that.
Yeah, he was a good example.
And that concern for the marginalized
became,
you know, a real part of American public life.
Absolutely.
And contributed to American philanthropy.
Yes.
Okay, and then we also see these new forms of assembly emerging during this time.
Yes.
So you have these big gatherings.
Yeah, like Whitefield preaching on Boston Common.
Right. And they demonstrated this power of voluntary participation.
Yes.
And then you have these new authority figures.
Right.
Who weren't appointed by the state.
No, it was based on their godliness, their perceived godliness.
Right. And these models of assembly were transferable to the political sphere, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which paved the way for public gatherings and this kind of non-official leadership.
Yeah, more grassroots.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, perhaps most profoundly, the Awakening really fostered the sense of the sovereignty of the people.
That's right.
And, you know, the sheer numbers of people
who
were participating in these gatherings,
I
think that really gave them this sense of collective identity and empowerment.
Yes. That's
and it made people more willing to express independent thought.
Yes.
And criticize even public officials.
That's right. Even the king.
Including the King of England.
Yeah.
So Dr. Green actually says, considered as a social event, the Great Awakening signifies nothing less than the first stage of the American Revolution.
Wow. That's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, it's a pretty big statement, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he's really drawing this link between the social transformations.
Yes.
Brought about by the Awakening and the political upheaval that followed.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it really makes you think, like, could the American Revolution have happened without the first Great Awakening?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Yeah, and I think what Dr. Green is saying is probably not.
Yeah, I think he's making that case pretty strongly.
Okay, so you, listener, you now have a much better understanding of the key individuals,
yes,
the turning points,
yeah,
and the consequences of the first Great Awakening in America.
Yes.
You know, from the theological roots in this Calvinistic revival and the focus on personal faith,
yeah,
to these kind of surprising social impacts, like empowering the common person,
yes,
fostering independence, and even laying the groundwork,
absolutely,
for a revolution.
Absolutely.
And I think that shift in Harvard's motto is really revealing,
yeah,
you know, this deliberate removal of in Christ and in the church.
Yeah.
It really speaks volumes, I think, about the intellectual climate of the time.
Yeah, the changing times and this growing influence of Enlightenment thinking.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've also just begun to look at the theological currents over in England,
right,
with Jacob Arminius,
yes,
and the early life of John Wesley.
Yeah.
So next time, we're going to really delve into what was happening at Oxford,
yeah,
and how the Wesleyan revival unfolded.
Yeah.
And we're going to be looking at, you know, the similarities and differences with the American Awakening.
It'd be interesting to compare them. Yeah.
Yeah. So this leads me to a thought-provoking question,
okay,
for you, the listener, to consider.
Okay.
How persuasive do you find the argument,
yeah,
that the Great Awakening was the first stage of the American Revolution?
Yeah.
And what aspects of the Awakening do you think were most instrumental in contributing to this?
Good question.
It's something to ponder as you go about your day.
Food for thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until next time.
See you then.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.